Hey, everybody. Good evening. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. How you doing tonight? Hope you're doing fine. If you're listening via the internet, I believe our internet stream is back to where it should be. If you're listening via the radio, welcome to the program. If you're listening via satellite radio, hello. And if you're not listening, damn, why not? Why not? Call up a friend. Say, hey, you got to tune in. This guy's out of his mind. Barack Obama's speech today, we will have policy speech. We will have a couple of clips from that. I think it's important. Also left over from last night, some clips from Man or Monkey announcing his efforts to protect non-oil-producing regions of the Western Pacific, which the sound bites themselves are kind of funny. It's so difficult to sometimes for me to appreciate someone who is without a sense of irony at all. And Bush is that way. Have you ever noticed that? I'm sure you have. Also, we're going to cover here in the first segment some more information about what's going on in Gaza, in the Middle East. If you've had enough of that topic, you may want to just tune out and come back in about 15 minutes, but perhaps you'll stick around for that. One of the things in Obama's speech, let me touch on this right away, and it's been hashed over by commentators on the filthy Fox network and also on the MSNBC and CNN networks, a little bit on the broadcast networks too. But the cost, Obama is facing something that is unique in U.S. history, and that is a country that is about to end. That's us. We are so close to the brink. Nobody really talks too much about this because it's a scary topic. It really is. It scares the bejesus out of me. But we are so close to going belly up as a nation, as a society, as to render any discussion about not saving the economy to be absolutely, utterly meaningless. We have to do this. We have to do this. And this is where government has to step in. It has to happen, or we can go back to kind of a king and serf arrangement. I'm sure Limbaugh and the rest of the elite pigs would love that. But anyway, we're not there yet. So the talk today was about the enormous cost involved. And Obama, at least, was direct enough to not mince words or hedge or anything. He just came around and said it. This is going to go on for quite some time. These massive deficits, the cost of trying to restart the economic engine that the U.S. can be, is going to be enormous. All the right-wing pissants today could talk about on radio and television, where's the money going to come from? Like that's a consideration? Like that has been a consideration for the past 8 years as the Republicans utterly and absolutely destroyed the country? Oh, my God. All of a sudden, see? Yeah, the cost is enormous. But imagine, for just a moment, if the Bush bastard and the Republicans had taken care of business the way they were hired, or so we thought, to take care of business. What most people didn't realize, the brain-dead Americans who consistently vote against their own best interests by voting for these Republicans, is that this was the agenda of the Republican Party. It has been since Reagan. Destroy it. It being the United States. Destroy the underpinnings. Absolutely gut it. Bankrupt it. Bring it to the point where Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, all social programs with the exception of the sacrosanct military, everything else fails. In that regard, this has been the Bush-Cheney years have been a resounding success. They've done wonderful. The problem is, there are 200 or 300 million of us in this country who are now going to suffer mightily, as are our children and our grandchildren. So had the Bush bastard and the Republicans not cast the entire country into the category of deferred maintenance, we wouldn't be here now, would we? No, we wouldn't. We'll get to that a little bit later on this evening. Have you seen the video of the street execution by a 27-year-old cop in Oakland of 22-year-old Oscar Grant? I finally got around to seeing the video today. Jesus Christ. I mean, the guy is lying on the ground. If you're not familiar with this story, just Google street execution or Oscar Grant or disturbances in Oakland. It's all over out there. But there's the video. There's the video. And I the guy is lying on the street. Three people hauled off the Bay Area Rapid Transit train in Oakland. I believe I've got that part of it right. For a disturbance. Didn't say it was a fight. And the railroad police, I'm not trying to demean them. I don't know what to call them. The BART police have these three guys down on the ground. And from what I can tell, they forced Oscar Grant to lie on his face on the pavement so they could handcuff him, I assume. And then the video clearly shows one of the cops pulling out his service revolver, pointing it at Oscar Grant, and executing him on the street, just murdering him. It's astonishing. Now, as you know, the cop immediately resigned. I have no idea. It was probably to protect himself or something. I don't know. I have no idea. But the protests that are going on, ongoing, I should say, in Oakland. I even saw Ron Dellums, the mayor of Oakland. I believe he's the mayor, isn't he? Yeah, the old Black Panther dude. Jesus, I remember Ron Dellums when his hair was black. Not to make light of this at all, but there was Dellums out there tonight, or was it last night, asking people to calm down, that they're not looking for riots in the streets. Okay, yeah, fair enough. But, I mean, it is hard to take this in for me. You know, and I'm not naive by any means. I realize where we live. I realize what violence is in this country, in Israel, in Russia. I mean, pick a country. Okay, we know what violence is. So not to come across as naive, but there was nothing. One moment, and I think I saw this for God's sake until I saw it on YouTube. I saw it on ABC Nightly News. I think it was ABC or was it NBC? But there's a video. The guy lying on the street, face down. The cop pulls out a gun and executes him. There's no contact between the cop and Oscar Grant. Nothing. There's no struggle going on. Oscar Grant is not trying to grab the weapon or grab the cop or roll around on the ground. He is lying still. And the cop executes him. Murders him. Now, you call it what you want. I call it, first of all, it's cold-blooded murder. Now, is it first-degree murder? See, we have to get into that, right? Is it first-degree murder? Was it premeditated murder? Okay, who knows? By the usual standards and definitions that wind up in a courtroom, no, it's not premeditated murder. What is it then? But Oscar Grant had a four-year-old child. I have a four-year-old child. Oscar Grant apparently was studying to become a cook, a chef. I don't know if I have that part of the story right or not. He was a guy riding on the BART. He was riding on the train. I don't know what happened on the train among these three riders. But I do know that the three of them were taken off the train, and maybe it was four. I think it was three. And Oscar Grant was summarily executed by a police officer. And people are wondering why folks in Oakland are going ballistic. Oh, please.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. I hate to give such scant attention to the summary execution of a young man in Oakland or the slaughter of hundreds upon hundreds of Gazans. That's the one of the biggest complaints I have about media work, any media work, is that it is superficial at best. It skims across the top. It hits the headlines, maybe goes in a paragraph or two or an inch below the surface. I used to think that talk radio was long-form format to the extent that looking below the surface was possible. To some degree, I guess, talk radio does that. But with the commercials that we have, the commercial breaks and so on and so forth, and the fact that there is so much that seems to demand attention, it's difficult. But I do want to move back to leave this story, this terrible, terrible, terrible story about Oscar Grant, who was lying face down on the station platform when he was murdered New Year's Day. And go back to momentarily, what we were talking about last night, about the attack by Israel on and the occupation, the ongoing occupation by Israel of Palestinian territory, and this assault on Gaza. Do you remember former President Jimmy Carter's book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid? And when that book came out, there were 20 or so American Jews who resigned from the board of directors of the Carter Center here in Atlanta because they said that he was an anti-Semite. Jimmy Carter, an anti-Semite. Jesus, God. Carter had warned against the dangers of an apartheid system similar to what existed in South Africa all those years in the occupied territories of Israel. And he claimed that at times, and the claim is valid, that the apartheid system used against the Palestinians by the Israelis was worse than what had occurred in South Africa in some instances. And I have no disagreement with that. And I have spent the better part of 20 years studying everything that I can as an American without having actually been to the Middle East. About the conflict there, the genesis of it, the occupation, the ongoing occupation that has driven Palestinians as a people near collective insanity, the murder, the terrorist acts in response, and again, one person's terrorism is another person's resistance. So call it what you want. But a growing number of Israeli historians now excuse me, are refusing to continue to deny history and are affirming that the Jewish state was created using wide-scale ethnic cleansing. This is from an article that I found online by Marwan Bishara. The wide-scale ethnic cleansing that the Israelis, the European and American Jews, used against the Palestinians back in the late 40s, leading to the displacement of three-quarters of Palestine's indigenous population. The people who decided that the British Mandate was finished and that it was that Israel was going to become a religious state. When those people arrived, they destroyed over 300 Palestinian villages and towns. They established 600 new Jewish localities, some right where the Palestinian villages had been, and others on lands confiscated illegally from the people who owned the territory. This was one of the horrific claims to me made subsequent to World War II, that in so many instances, not just the Nazis, but other governments had taken advantage of the Holocaust and moved against their Jewish populations and stole everything they could get their goddamn hands on from the Jews, their art, their music, their possessions, their homes, their businesses, everything, just took it. And how many claims have been filed by Jewish citizens who now live around the globe, some in Israel, some in the United States, Canada, wherever, against the Swiss for facilitating the theft of all that property? But that's exactly what was done and is being done to the Palestinians. I defy any of you. I don't care if you are an absolute fire-breathing Zionist to call in the program. I'll put you on and tell me where the difference is. Where is the difference between the confiscation of Jewish property during the run-up to and during World War II and the confiscation of Palestinian property subsequent to World War II and ongoing? Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there is a Zionist out there who's a hell of a lot smarter about this than I am and can call in and tell me and the audience, huh? You got all night to do it. I know religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer.
Nighty night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. One of the disadvantages of doing long-form programming like talk radio is it gives you many more hours, if you're Mike Malloy, to really screw up. For example, referring to Ron Dellums as a former member of the Panther Party, my deepest apologies to anyone who might be offended by that, although... you know, I don't see that as being offensive, but as Irish Dave wrote in, Dellums never was a member of the Panther Party. As a matter of fact, he was a 13-term member of the U.S. House of Representatives from the 9th Congressional District in California. He's also a former Marine, and he had the distinct honor of earning a place on President Nixon's enemy list for a number of reasons. You know, when I put my foot in my mouth, I do it blatantly. Ron Dellums is Ron Dellums. He's currently the mayor of Oakland. Back to the quick history of what has happened with the Palestinians and the Israeli Jews. As Marwan Bishara continues, for six decades, Arabs who are citizens of Israel have suffered from official discrimination in the Jewish state, and they are considered to be a demographic threat, the Arabs, the Palestinians are. And that's understandable, because if the Palestinian Arabs were granted the same thing that the Jews are granted, where it concerns Israel, the right of return, if they return from the Palestinian diaspora, then and had the right to vote, then the Jewish state would only be a Jewish state until the next election. So, yeah, it is a democratic threat or a demographic threat, the Palestinian Arabs or Palestinian, they can, whatever the religion is. Remember, Israel set up as a religious state. It is a Jewish state, and consequently, by definition, if you're not a Jew, how do you have citizenship? So the discrimination against the Palestinian denies them that right of return or equal rights to the land as their fellow Jewish citizens. You see, Yitzhak Rabin, the late prime minister, among others, has expressed shame at the way Israel treated its Palestinian minority. And that's one of the reasons Rabin was assassinated, isn't it? Now, to Jimmy Carter, who witnessed lived in the civil rights struggle here in the South, where black folk were doing everything possible, short of open violence, to establish freedom and equality with whites during the 50s and 60s. During those same decades, the Palestinians in Israel were striving peacefully to attain the same freedoms. They were a lot less successful. And as Bishara writes, although they enjoy certain political and civic rights, the Jewish state continues to treat its Palestinian citizens as undesirable aliens. And many Israeli leaders have publicly stated their desire to be rid of these people. Which reminds me of the book They Must Go, written by Amir Kahane before he was murdered in New York by an Egyptian, I believe. And the they in the title are the Palestinians. They must go. The Israelis have slowly taken over as much of what the Palestinians consider to be Palestine as they possibly can. And Israel itself has generally designed its policies and laws to take Palestinian land in any number of ways, permanently if possible. After the 1967 occupation, it was the moderate labor leadership in Israel that led the illegal colonization of the West Bank and Gaza. 2 decades later, the labor leadership oversaw the largest increases of settlers and Palestinian segregation during the so-called peace process, and with the tacit approval of the Clinton administration. And then beginning in 1994, Premiers Rabin, Peres, and Barak, Ehud Barak, created 2 separate road networks. How many Americans are aware of this? Land zoning, security systems in favor of the Jewish settler minority. There are roads in what we would consider to be the countryside in Israel that Palestinians are not allowed to drive on. And as Jimmy Carter argued in his book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, it is a combination of generations of calculating Israeli leaders from both the left and the right, rather than the hot-blooded extremists who are responsible for the segregationist system in the occupied territories. The settlements that we hear about so much couldn't have survived if it wasn't for government-sponsored projects, preferential treatment, and huge subsidies. So Carter makes the case that Israel is capable of discriminating against and subjugating another people through violence. But he predictably refrains from invoking the ideological underpinning there. And for their part, the Palestinians have been vocal in their denunciation of Israeli racism, as they see it from behind their barbed wire refuge camps and Bantustans. This, you know, I'm not trying to put you to sleep with this stuff. The pictures that are out there on the web right now of the bloodied and butchered Palestinian children are atrocious. Pictures that have been out there on the web of buses in Tel Aviv blown to pieces with Jewish school children on them, or people sitting in restaurants in Jewish cities, resort cities, blown to pieces by bombs. They are equally atrocious and horrifying. But again, and this is a fair question, are people who are being occupied not allowed the right of resistance? How they affect that resistance depends a lot on the culture, whatever ethical standards they have, what they consider to be morality, religion, if it enters into it, God forbid. But isn't that, I mean, resistance to occupation, is that not written somewhere? Is it an unwritten law? What would you do, American, if all of a sudden the United States was occupied? Would you resist? And what form would the resistance take? If you tried peaceful resistance for 20 years and we're constantly being shot, murdered, sent to concentration camps. What would you do? That's all. It's a fair question, damn it. It's a fair question. I know what I would do. I would resist with violence until I was killed, and I would be killed, and I understand that. But what... I mean, to expect the people who live there. You know, you can look what happened today. The United Nations and the Red Cross now have suspended food deliveries to Gaza. The Red Cross is accusing Israel of blocking medical assistance after IDF forces opened fire on aid workers, killing two of them. Jesus, God, I mean... What are the Israeli military? What is the Israeli military going to claim on this one? They claim that there were militants in the school they blew up and took 40 civilian lives. I saw somebody speaking for the Israeli government on CNN or MSNBC today who said that the ambulances used by the Red Cross are actually being used as transport for Palestinian terrorists. Who on earth believes that? And that the UN food convoys are really somehow a threat to Israel. My God. Simon Horner of the European Commission Aid Department said 60% of Gaza's 1.5 million people have no electricity. Every day, fewer and fewer people have access to clean water. The sewage system is absolutely failing. They're expecting an outbreak of disease not unlike Zimbabwe. Medical services are almost non-existent now. The World Health Organization says 21 Palestinian medical workers have been killed and 30 more injured since Israel began its offensive. Oh, my God. And what do we hear coming from the IDF or the spokesman for the Israeli government? Well, Hamas uses civilians as human shields. And the rest of the world is supposed to believe that. So what do you do? I know that there are people in talk radio who refuse to talk about this topic from the perspective of the Palestinians, and I understand that frustration. I really do, because my sitting here talking about this tonight, or your listening, is going to do absolutely nothing. Again, I said this last night, it has appalled me for 30 years, or 25 years, the absolute mind-staggering depth of ignorance that exists in this country where it concerns the reality of the Israeli-Palestinian issue.
And Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. By the way, an Iranian ship that is headed for the bringing relief aid, 2,000 tons of humanitarian aid to the Palestinians, has reportedly entered Egyptian water and scheduled to dock at the port of Gaza this Saturday coming. According to, is this from Press TV? I think it is. The ship passed through the Suez Canal, will head for Gaza after obtaining needed permissions, with quotes around that last. I'm not sure what that means, but The Iranian ship is carrying medicine and food, including rice, flour, sugar, as well as a group of medics and nurses. What do you suppose is going to happen if that ship is attacked, much like the USS Liberty was, or even rammed as the little boat with volunteers, including Cynthia McKinney, was rammed of several days ago? What do you suppose will happen if an Iranian ship, this is not a little, you know, floating box with volunteers in it. This is a ship flying under Iranian registry trying to bring relief to people who are being attacked. What do you suppose will happen if Israel decides to stop that ship? Yeah, well, you pretty much know what will happen. And finally, the last couple of nights I've been watching Oberman during the last few minutes before we go on the air, and I've seen this ad begging for aid to Israel. It's on Countdown with Keith Olbermann, other cable shows too. But the ad is a product, according to Raw Story, or is it TV News Lies? I guess both. It's a product of a group with close ties to neocons, the right-wing evangelical community, and former associates of Jack Abramoff. You remember him. The ad follows the standard pattern of these kinds of appeals. After first creating a sense of panic, it then assures viewers they can help by sending money. Now, again, I cannot stand people who do not have a sense of irony in this day and age. I realize a lot of people say, well, irony is dead. No, it's not. Irony is so thick, it's a wonder any of us can breathe. But there's a female voice intoning over and over again what happens, or what appears to be stock footage of wounded Israelis. And with no sense of irony, the voiceover, the woman's voice, says that the Israelis are under attack and you can help by sending money because the Gaza, Hamas, somebody is attacking the Israelis. The female voice says, Israel and its beleaguered people need our support now. You can save the life of an innocent woman, a man, woman, or child. The difference between life and death for Israel and its people is in our hands. The group behind the ad is our old familiar friends, the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, that most self-respecting American Jews want nothing to do with. Pat Robertson backs this. Falwell backed it before he stepped off to meet his demon. And, of course, John Hagee, this psychopathic lard ass that claims to – what is his organization, Kathy? Christians for Jews or something? I don't know. Huh? No, it's not Jews for Jesus. No, it's – never mind. Ralph Reed is involved in this. But if you get a chance, maybe you've seen the ad. I couldn't believe it. There it is. I realize that it's television. It's cable television. Anyone who can afford to put an ad up that doesn't violate broadcast standards and practices, I guess, will put the ad up. But the lack of a sense of irony. Here is this plea as the Israeli Defense Forces are killing hundreds of innocent civilians, hundreds of people, bombing them. And now I've been reading some reports, I don't know if they're true, that the Israelis are using incendiary devices like white phosphorus, fighting in Gaza, the most densely populated armpit on earth, 1.5 million people crowded into an area. How big is Gaza? The size of Manhattan? I don't even know. I know it's very, very tiny. Or is it the size of Central Park? But with no sense of irony whatsoever comes this ad saying, if you want to save the life of a man, woman, or child in Israel, then send money at the very time that the Israeli Defense Forces are butchering men, women, and children. Jesus Christ! I mean, do these people who put this ad out, do they have no sense of proportion, no sense of decency or honor? Could they not save this until some other time? This filthy ad? Well, the United Nations Security Council has passed, apparently, a resolution, I think, calling for a truce, a ceasefire. And how did the United States vote? If I've got this right, the United States abstained. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? The United States abstained, wouldn't vote no or yes about ending this, or at least bringing about a truce to try to bring the sides together. All right. At the risk of losing my own moral underpinnings here, we're going to move on when we come back after this break and talk a bit about what Obama had to say today. All right, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. So, yeah, the United Nations Security Council has voted overwhelmingly to approve a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. 14 of the Security Council's 15 members, 14 of 15 voted in favor of the resolution. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, this murderous bitch, abstained from the vote on behalf of the U.S. She would not vote, which means that Condoleezza Rice is another Dick Cheney, blood-drinking, murderous vampire who represents the United States on the global stage. So the next time, and there will be a next time, there will be a next time, when the fury of people who are treated like this by the United States explodes, and some freak in the U.S. government, usually Republican, says, well, I don't know why they hate us. Now you know. You can't say you don't know any longer. 14 of the 15, including the 5 permanent members and the 10 revolving members, 14 of the 15 on the UN Security Council said, yeah, immediate ceasefire. Condoleezza Rice abstains. Jesus, God. And in case you have any doubt, the Security Council, the function of the Security Council, according to the Charter of the United Nations, the function of the Security Council is to establish and maintain peace around the globe. It has the power to create peacekeeping operations, impose sanctions, authorize military action. In order, they're the guys in the blue helmets, the ones that usually show up in a horrendous war zone with no weapons. And Condoleezza Rice, with their filthy, disgusting, smarmy attitude, sits there. The United States abstains. But there was a vote in the Senate today According to Reuters news agency, the U.S. Senate. I know I said I was going to move on. I'm going to, but I can't. This is, Jesus God. The United States Senate voiced strong support today for Israel's invasion of Gaza. The Senate agreed on a voice vote to the non-binding resolution, co-sponsored by Democratic and Republican Party leaders in the chamber, and by the way, written by AIPAC. Harry Reid, the Democrat, the Senate Majority Leader, said before the vote, quote, "When we pass this resolution, the United States will strengthen our historic bond with the State of Israel by affirming Israel's inalienable right to defend itself against attacks from Gaza, as well as our support for the Israeli-Palestinian peace process," end quote. The last part of that's a goddamn lie, Reid, and you know it. You don't support it any more than Netanyahu supports it. This is incredible. And then this freak, the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, Kentucky, Republican, said before the vote, quote, "The Israelis are responding exactly the same way we would," end quote. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? In the first place, again, no sense of irony. Yeah, the Israelis invade and occupy. The United States invades and occupies. The population that is being occupied, whether it is Iraqi or Palestinian, responds. And Mitch McConnell is right without realizing it. Yes, the Israelis are responding the same way we would. Murder the sons of bitches. Blow them into a million pieces. Kill their children. Destroy their houses of worship. Ruin their water supply. End their ability to take care of themselves. Enclose them in goddamn concentration camps. Yes, Mitch McConnell, you freaky Nazi, you're right. Israel is responding the same way we would. Don't ever sit back, gentle listener, in the future and say to yourself, why do they hate us? They hate us because people like Condoleezza Rice and Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid and every puke in the United States Senate who voted for this resolution represents America. The people, the Palestinian or the Arab people, they don't give a damn about what you think or I think. They look at what official U.S. policy is. And official U.S. policy is the continuing murder and destruction of Palestinian people, Arab people. So don't ever, please, I mean, for your own, if you have any self-respect left living in this country, and it's difficult. Because we keep trying to tell ourselves, those of us on the so-called left, I don't do this. I don't set this policy. But if you have any self-respect left, don't ever sit back on your ass and start whining and sticking your thumb in your mouth when we are attacked and ask yourself, why did they do this to us? Don't do that. Don't denigrate your own intelligence, your own humanity, your own understanding by saying that. Why did they do it to us? And the House will follow suit. They will pass a similar resolution. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Gaza is the world's largest concentration camp. And again, I defy anyone to refute that. It's horrifying. Have you heard the reports of the children, the Palestinian children, the 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 year olds, whose houses have been bombed by the Israelis? And the parents have been killed, and the children sit there beside the corpses and will not leave because it's mommy and daddy? How does that grab you? Huh? Think about that tonight as you're going to sleep, okay? And so the Red Cross and the UN rescue workers and the few people that are over there trying desperately to stop this slaughter, they discover these children. and the children will not leave the corpse of their mom or their dad. And we support this. And Condoleezza Rice abstained. Jesus God. The immorality demonstrated on a daily basis by the government of the United States is something that if you know, all these people that believe in the supreme being and a God and some omniscient creature that sits up in the clouds and keeps a scorecard, did they not realize what they are doing? That their God, their divinity, their divine being is sitting up there thinking, I'll be a son of a bitch. Look what I have created. Look at these monsters. Look at these monsters. Condoleezza Rice and George Bush and the rest of these swine who have no problem going to church on Sunday and yet will not vote to end the slaughter of civilians. I read today that approaching 800 Palestinian civilians now have been butchered. And of that 800, it's approaching 300 are children. Jesus God, does that not register? I mean, I can't get through the day. I can't go from the basement to the kitchen without thinking to myself, son of a bitch, do you realize what's happening? I've got a 4-year-old here in the house. And I can just see her squatting by her mother's corpse and not moving, waiting for mommy to wake up. Jesus God!
And mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who died? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the...
Get your range on. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Barack Obama today. It's kind of hard to make that, you know, subject transition, but let's try to move forward here. Barack Obama today tried to explain the nightmare that he's inheriting from the Republicans, who have done everything in their power in the past 8 years, actually the past 20 years, to absolutely destroy the United States. So Barack Obama, who wanted to be president, now tries to address what is issue number one domestically for Americans.
We start 2009 in the midst of a crisis unlike any we have seen in our lifetime, a crisis that has only deepened over the last few weeks. Nearly 2 million jobs have been now lost. And on Friday, we're likely to learn that we lost more jobs last year than at any time since World War II. Just in the past year, another 2.8 million Americans who want and need full-time work have had to settle for part-time jobs. Manufacturing has hit a 28-year low. Many businesses cannot borrow or make payroll. Many families cannot pay their bills or their mortgage. Many workers are watching their life savings disappear. And many, many Americans are both anxious and uncertain of what the future will hold. Now, I don't believe it's too late to change course, but it will be if we don't take dramatic action as soon as possible. If nothing is done, this recession could linger for years.
You see, this is the Bush-Cheney legacy, what you just heard. We lost more jobs last year anytime during World War II. 2.8 million Americans just in the past year who want full-time work have had to settle for part-time. Manufacturing, 28-year low. Businesses can't borrow or make payroll. Families can't pay their bills. Workers watching their life savings disappear. And there were, what, 50 million Americans who voted for these sons of bitches in this last election? This is astonishing. Who voted for Republicans? Republicans who have done this? And what did Cheney say the other night? The economic crisis that hit this country 6 months ago? Yeah, 6 months ago. So there's Obama. First of all, trying to identify the problem in terms that Americans can understand, because Republicans and the national media don't do that. So he's trying, I assume he's trying to say, look, here's the deal. Here's the deal. And again, remember in 2000 when this country was handed off through theft to the Bush crime family with a budget surplus. And the last, 3 years of the Clinton administration, the national debt had been paid down. Money had been paid into the national debt. And there were budget surpluses on the horizon as far as you could see. And what was the first thing the Bush crime family did when they took over? They made Bernie Madoff look like a punk on the street, a crack dealer who sells $10 rocks. That's what they made Bernie Madoff look like. Not even that high. The Bush crime family stole the country blind, absolutely destroyed us. Barack Obama says it's not beyond the point of no return. He says, I don't believe it's too late to change course, but if we don't take dramatic action, we're in a world of hurt. Now, the Republicans, of course, I had to do it. I switched over to Fox News immediately after his speech today to listen to the commentary from the rat bastards over there. And it's astonishing. Rather than getting on board with this moderate centrist president to be, these vermin sit there and start taking apart. Well, now, where's the money going to come from? You sons of bitches, where did the money come from for all the destruction that has occurred in the 8 years of Bush? We have two more here from Obama, where he explains what changes are going to be necessary to turn the economy around and some details about his plan. And I said the other night or the night before or sometime, watch what the right wingers, especially those scum that are in media, watch what they do. Watch how they try to bring about the complete destruction. This country is so severely and grievously wounded. We're like a huge bird with a broken wing and a broken leg, and we're just kind of, and blood's coming out of our beak, and we're just struggling. And the Republicans want to come up and stomp on us. That's what they want to do. They want to see this country, for once and for all, the social underpinnings of this country, the hope of the middle class and the working class, crushed. Crushed. We'll be back.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
26 before the hour. Back to Barack Obama's economic policy speech today. After pretty bluntly lying out what we're faced with, as if we had to be told, right? But at least it seems that Obama is going to try to be honest. We'll see. After laying it out, he then tries to explain what changes will be necessary to turn things around. Regulatory reforms for banks. Actually, I don't know why reforms are needed. I'm sure there are some. All that's needed is enforcement of the laws that are already on the books. The Bush crime family, it's not called a crime family because they obey the law. The Bush crime family and this little weasel bastard that they had heading the SEC violated the law by ignoring it. You know, just go, boys. The vault is open. Take what you want. Steal it all from these dumb American taxpayers and people who did have a little savings and 401k. Steal it all. Take it from them. Whose job was it? It was Christopher Cox, the former representative from California, Republican, who was just a mouth breather. Wasn't he one of the House managers who went after Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton and his girlfriend got a little, and Clinton denies it under oath or something like that? Christopher Cox, oh, he was right there then, wasn't he, huh? But this ignorant little skunk. And it's not ignorance, it's complicity, it's theft, grand theft, theft on a scale that you and I can't even imagine. So Obama now tries to explain what's going to be necessary. Regulatory reforms for banks and lending institutions and responsible spending by the lawmakers in Washington. Good luck, Barack.
There is no doubt that the cost of this plan will be considerable. It will certainly add to the budget deficit in the short term. It is true that we cannot depend on government alone to create jobs or long-term growth. But at this particular moment, only government can provide the short-term boost necessary to lift us from a recession this deep and severe. This plan must begin today. A plan I am confident will save or create at least 3 million jobs over the next few years. It's not just another public works program. It's a plan that recognizes both the paradox and promise of this moment. The fact that there are millions of Americans trying to find work, even as all around the country there's so much work to be done. And that's why we'll invest in priorities like energy and education, health care, and a new infrastructure that are necessary to keep us strong and competitive in the 21st century. That's why the overwhelming majority of the jobs created will be in the private sector. While our plan will save the public sector jobs of teachers, police officers, firefighters, and others who provide vital services.
Sounds a little waffly there towards the end, doesn't it? Yeah. But let's not remember the moratorium. My moratorium is still in effect. How do you suppose the Republicans in the House, where the money has to be appropriated, how do you suppose they're going to react? Can you imagine John Boehner? This ignorant little Republican bastard from Ohio, can you imagine what cooperation he's going to provide? You know, Obama can propose, he can lay out the plan, but Congress has to dispose, right? We all know that. The president proposes, Congress disposes. Now, it's my understanding that there are an awful lot of members of the House and Republicans and Democrats who are on board for this, because even some of these brain dead bastards understand how severe this problem is. It is only going to get worse, much worse. And as Obama says here, something has to be done today. But he also knows that nothing will be done today. As a matter of fact, given the nature of these Republican slime balls, it may be 2 years before anything gets done. Do you understand that? It may be that when Barack Obama is elected and the Republicans continue their destruction of this country because they hate this country, as they continue that, Barack Obama may have to wait for the midterm elections 2 years from now to get a veto-proof majority, because the Democrats in the Senate are cowardly sons of bitches who whine and bleat and complain because they don't have 60 members of their party in the Senate. Oh, we got to have veto-proof majority. Well, you really don't if you would do your jobs, but Democrats don't do their jobs. Democrats, the current crop, for the most part, with notable exceptions, but Democrats in the Senate and the House are cowards. Absolute stinking cowards. Not all of them, by any means. But that's what all the whining was about. Oh, we got to have 60. We got to have 60. Because if we don't, then we'll have to use the same techniques and practices that the Republicans use to get things done their way. And we can't do that. Why? Because you have morality and honesty? No, because we're cowards. Now, Obama then went on to detail more about his plans. He promises transparency, a real return on the taxpayer bailout of these financial institutions, meaningful middle-class tax cuts. Now, remember what John McCain and the hoe from Wasilla was saying up to and including Election Day. They're going to raise your taxes. He's going to raise your taxes. And the pig man and his bitch Hannity are still saying it. They're going to raise your taxes. Here's Obama again.
This recovery and reinvestment plan will provide immediate relief to states, workers, and families who are bearing the brunt of this recession. To get people spending again, 95% of working families will receive a $1,000 tax cut. The first stage of a middle-class tax cut that I promised during the campaign and will include in our next budget. To help Americans who have lost their jobs and can't find new ones, we'll continue the bipartisan extension of unemployment insurance and health care coverage to help them through this crisis. Now, I understand that some might be skeptical of this plan. Our government has already spent a good deal of money, but we haven't yet seen that translate into more jobs or higher incomes or renewed confidence in our economy. And that's why the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan won't just throw money at our problems. We'll invest in what works. Instead of politicians doling out money behind a veil of secrecy, decisions about where we invest will be made transparently. Every American will be able to hold Washington accountable for these decisions by going online to see how and where their taxpayer dollars are spent.
Okay, that sounds fair enough. The only thing I'm a little bit concerned about was in his statement today where he talked, and we don't have it. We were going to get it tonight, but we decided out of hell that. But where he said that the reason we're in this situation is because of the irresponsibility that has existed in this country from Wall Street to Washington. But in his speech today, in his talk at George Mason University, he also seemed to back up a little bit from this vast public works program that every single economist who understands how to restart this economy has endorsed. A massive public work. And he said it himself, the irony of the situation, or he called it a paradox, all these Americans who need jobs and all the work that needs to be done. Okay. Let me see. 1 + 1 = oh, damn, this is a tough one. 1 + 1 = 2! So if we have the workers available, the sheet metal workers and the steel workers, the construction people, the plumbers, the electricians, all these people who have seen manufacturing jobs leave the country, and we've got a country that's falling apart. You know, in downtown Atlanta here, the whole sewer system is about to collapse, and Atlanta is not unique in that regard. The infrastructure of city after city. And it's not just in the urban areas. It's all over the place. Republicans and Democrats, But for the most part, Republicans have said to hell with it. You know what Republicans want to do? Fix the roads? Nah, let's sell them off to some consortium of Middle Eastern oil producers. You know, let's sell the Indiana Turnpike. Let's sell the PA Turnpike. Let's sell the Denver water supply, water system. Let's sell the electrical grid in California. Why should we do it? So hopefully, Barack Obama's plan has not drifted away from the massive public works program. Public works program, those three words do not translate into, state welfare. It translates into jobs and money circulating through the economy that we desperately need right now. We'll see very quickly, won't we? We'll see whether or not Barack Obama is a man of his word, and we'll see just how stinking low Republicans can sink.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. The the experts are already commenting on this. David Rosnick, who is an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research, said today, quoting, "While short on specific numbers, Obama helped prepare the country for a large but much-needed stimulus package to be negotiated by Congress over the next few weeks. Speedy and large should be our watchwords," Rosnick writes. "As the recession continues to deepen, Obama should insist on a separate package for state and local governments. If Congress delays funding the entire package, it is vitally important that the fall off in government revenues, which is a consequence of the bursting housing bubble and the crash in the stock market, it's vitally important that the fall off in government revenues not impede the passage of a large stimulus." What is it I read recently? Maybe you read it too. Something like 36 states have huge budget shortfalls. They call it on the state level. The states are prohibited from deficit financing, where the federal government is not. The states cannot run a budget deficit. I don't know why. Don't ask me, but that's just the way it is. So what happens when we get into the situation here in Georgia? They're cutting Peach Care, which is the children's health insurance program here. They're cutting mental health services. They're cutting services for the aged and the handicapped. They're closing down, instead of school buses now, the counties providing school bus service, driving through the rural areas, you now have to bring your child to a pickup point, which means more cars on the road in the morning, more parents trying to get their kids to a pickup point rather than the bus coming by. It's astonishing what is happening. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And, of course, Dick Cheney wants you to believe that all this began 6 months ago. And this is what these right-wing sons of bitches on radio and television want you to believe, too, that the Bush crime family inherited a declining economy from Bill Clinton and have struggled mightily with two wars and an attack on September 11th and all the things that they have tried to do. Bless their little pea-picking hearts. They have tried so hard, and they kept the economy going. What does George Bush like to say? Job growth every quarter for the last 5.5 years. What was it? Remember when Reagan's Secretary of Agriculture tried to have the ketchup declared a vegetable for the school lunch program? And I don't know if you were around back then. I was. And I thought to myself, Jesus, God, it can't get any worse than this. Well, it did. Wasn't it during the Bush administration where somebody who put together hamburgers that was declared to be a construction job? Manufacturing job? Huh? These are Republicans! And you 50 million brain dead jackasses that voted for him again, what in the hell is wrong with you? I work at McDonald's. I'm in manufacturing. My kid gets vegetables in the school lunch. He gets ketchup. What the hell is mustard? Oh, that's a seed, right? Yeah, my son gets seeds and vegetables for lunch. Ketchup and mustard. My God. Max Wolf, who is an instructor at the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School in New York, frequent contributor to Huffington Post and Asia Times, he said today, quote, "It is not President-elect Obama's fault that he's inheriting such a mess. That said, the time has come and gone for him to hang up the feel-good campaign talks about hope and inclusion responsibility and start the actual difficult and essential job of proposing and enacting legislation with Congress." Wolf writes, "This means a dangerous transition away from superhero, all things to all people, darling, and into the fray of actually governing. We need more than hope. We can't just resurrect the good old times. Those good old times were the disease. The present pain is just a symptom. We need to seriously and systematically restructure the economy." Well, I think the first way, in my opinion, the first way to start that restructuring, and I certainly agree, we definitely have to move to democratic socialism. There is no question. But the first thing that needs to be done is to get the debris, to get the bastards, to get the criminals out of the way. That means removing from any position of decision-making all Republicans. That doesn't mean ban them from the House and the Senate. Just reduce their numbers to the point where they can be no more irritating than a horse fly on a horse's ass. That's all the power Republicans should have. Have they not proved, going back to 94, and you can go way back to the 20s if you want to, of the last century, but starting in 94, have they not proved that they are incompetent where it concerns leadership? Does anyone have any doubt about that? Even the ideologues, the right-wing fanatics on the Republican right, who want war and death and empire and destruction, even they, if pressed, will tell you, no, we don't know the damn thing about governing domestically. We just love war and empire and killing. But they wouldn't say that? Oh, okay, I'll say it for them. Yeah. As the editor of the independent newspaper in New York City said today, we only have one president at a time. The Obama transition team is fond of saying. It appears they think there can only ever be one economic policy for today and tomorrow, and that's neoliberalism. And neoliberalism, that's the end of the quote. Neoliberalism, of course, has to be murdered, has to be utterly and absolutely destroyed, and recognized as the absolute economic failure that it's been. We'll take some phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Before we go to your phone calls, we just have a couple of more here I want you to hear. This is from Manor Monkey himself, the dolt who has destroyed the country, announcing his efforts to protect non-oil-producing regions of the far western Pacific. This is great stuff. You see, we're in the last days of the Bush crime family's reign of terror over the free and the not-so-free world. So Bunny Pants here has an aching desire to leave some kind of legacy other than corpses and destroyed environment and ruined economies. He's convinced himself now, being the crazed person that he is, he's got himself convinced he's a big environmentalist, right? And he wants the rest of the world to buy into this bizarre myth, too. So he decides to protect some of the most hostile and inhospitable deep reaches of the ocean where nobody has discovered any crude oil so far. But he's doing this in hopes that he'll be remembered as the savior of the blue Pacific. So called this last episode of his career, Curious George Saves the Ocean.
Lauren, I thank all of our distinguished guests, members of the conservation community. We are glad you're here. Governor, I am proud you're here. Thank you for coming. Representatives from America. Samoa, by the way, Northern Mariana Islands, Governor.
Yeah, there you
really
go.
Really appreciate you all coming. It's apologize for the weather, but I don't apologize for the policy because we're fixing to do some fabulous policy.
Yeah, we're fixing to.
Under the Antiquities Act that Theodore Roosevelt signed in 1906, the president can set aside places of historic or scientific significance to be protected as national monuments.
Really?
With the proclamations I will sign in a few moments.
Signing?
I am using that authority to designate three beautiful and biologically diverse areas of the Pacific Ocean as new marine national monuments.
Wow. Are you going to put any signing statements with this, you rat bastard? You're fixing to do some fabulous policy. Yeah, it's going to be fabulous. Thank you for coming, he says, representatives from Northern Mary Island. Northern Mary Island. Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad the governor is happy to be there. Now, it's amazing how smug he looked during this 10-minute ceremony. I'm going to fix the whole world. It's as if he actually believes all the oceans of the world are really his, and he can do whatever he wants with them. Like he's, oh, I don't know, Zeus or Poseidon or something, and he owns the sea. What a fatuous idiot. And this is supposed to make us forget his thank you to the logging industry and his healthy forest initiative. Remember that? The one to clear-cut the forest. A healthy forest is a forest that doesn't exist, obviously. Or the arsenic in the water. Huh? How about, arsenic in the water? I wouldn't worry about the arsenic. You're going to have to worry about them E. coli's here, too. Or his refusal to sign the Kyoto Protocols to limit CO2 emissions. Oh, and his advocacy for drilling in the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge, you know, on the ice roads, and on and on and on. And he wants to be remembered as an environmentalist. Anyway, here's Raisin Brain, in his own words, describing one of the areas near Guam that he's not planning to drill.
The first is we will establish the Marianas Trench Marine National Monument.
Yeah, where is that?
At the heart of this protected area will be much of the Marianas Trench.
What is that?
The site of the deepest point on Earth.
Oh, okay.
And the surrounding arc of undersea volcanoes and thermal vents.
What's a thermal vent?
This unique geological region is more than five times longer than the Grand Canyon.
Really?
It is deeper than Mount Everest is tall.
Mount what?
It supports life in some of the harshest conditions imaginable.
Like what?
A fascinating array of species survive amid hydrogen-emitting volcanoes.
Ooh.
Hydrothermal vents that produce highly acidic and boiling water.
Ooh, big words.
And the only known location of liquid sulfur this side of Jupiter.
What is Jupiter? What is a Jupiter? The only known location of liquid sulfur this side of Jupiter? Is that right? Well, aren't you just some kind of a goddamn astronomer, scientist, environmentalist? Wow, George! This side of Jupiter. The site, the Mariana's Trench, the site of the deepest point on Earth, it says here, and the surrounding arc of undersea volcanoes and thermal vents. So, since basically nobody ever goes there, and the one thing you'll find living there are thermal activated bacteria, you might as well tick that one off the list. Polar bears up in Anwar, screw them. But we're going to save the invertebrate anglerfish. Now, what's that? Tell me, George, what's a thermal vent? I'll give you $50 if you can, you ignoramus. All right, now call me nutty, but it's just silly fun. It really is to hear Mensa Man try to talk about things he has absolutely no knowledge of or interest in, like coral reefs and monk seals and such. So here it is, the second place he cares nothing about. So listen up as this great environmentalist signs the monument's order to protect shoreboards. Shoreboard. Don't ask me. Protect shoreboards and make a healthier Earth.
The second new monument will be the Pacific Remote Islands Marine National Monument. The monument will span seven areas to the far south and west of Hawaii. One is Wake Island, the site of a pivotal battle in World War II, and a key habitat for nesting seabirds and migratory shorebirds.
Shorebirds. Shorebirds.
More than 300 species of stony corals.
Oh, yeah.
The monument will also include unique trees and grasses and birds adapted to life at the equator. The new steps I've announced today are the capstone of an 8-year commitment to strong environmental protection and conservation.
Oh, please.
We have charted the way toward a more promising era in environmental stewardship.
Oh, stop it!
And while there's a lot more work to be done, we have done our part to leave behind a cleaner and healthier and better world for those who follow us on this Earth.
Oh, my God.
And I would like those who have been assigned the task of standing up here to join me as I sign the National Monument.
You signed the national monuments? You mean the bill, not the actual monuments, you dumbass, because they're underwater and stuff. You know what I'm saying? What is this? The new steps I've announced today are the capstone of an 8-year commitment to strong environmental protection and conservation. He actually said that. You just heard him. He is obviously drinking again. He is obviously a psychopathic moron. This administration has had an 8-year commitment to strong environmental protection and conservation. Oh, my God, somebody kill me now. Quick, quick, quick! This rat bastard who wants to drill for oil in the Grand Canyon? But there you have it. George W. Bush, environmentalist. Wow. That's really something, isn't it? Huh? Isn't that something? Now, let me sign these national monuments over here. And anybody got something that writes underwater? Got shore boards and a healthier planet. And with the shore boards and a healthier planet, we will facilitate the thermal vents obstructing the wood owl. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. Oh, God.
Is in the lead when it comes to energy independence. We're in the lead when it comes to global climate change, and we'll stay that way.
Bad grandma, baby.
imagine one day being able to drive your car with hydrogen as its power source and water driblets as the output of your engine. Hydrogen is the input, water is the output, and in the meantime, your car is going.
Well, hot damn. I just find that so hard to believe, but I believe you because I'm a Republican, and I know you're a God-fearing leader. Oh, geez. All right, it's 21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here. William is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. William, welcome to the program. All right, William is not there. Let's see. Flo is calling from Sunrise, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hi, Flo.
Hi. Did you say I'm William?
No, I said you're Flo. Do you want to be William? It's right with me.
Not tonight.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a couple of comments to make.
Okay.
Today I was listening to a reliable source, and he said in 2000 they found natural gas off the Gaza shores.
I've heard that, and also some oil someplace near Gaza. Is that right?
I heard about the natural gas, probably oil too, but do you think that has anything to do with what's going on there?
Actually, no. If we were invading and occupying Gaza, then the answer would be yes. No, I don't think the Israelis are doing what they're doing because of oil deposits or gas deposits mm-hmm. someplace. I think they're doing what they're doing because they have turned into a religio-fascist state, not terribly unlike the United States. So, no, I don't think it has anything to do with gas. Maybe it does. Maybe it does. I would think, though, that if Israel were going to start a war over resources, the resource would be water.
Mm-hmm. And then the Marianas Islands, that's where the sweatshops are. I would imagine Bush would like to preserve those.
Yeah, that's what Tom DeLay, if you remember a couple of years ago when Tom DeLay was working with Jack Abramoff and the rest of these thugs, the House, I believe the House, wanted to pass a law stating that children who were led into prostitution in the North Mariana Islands, the adults who were involved in that would be severely punished. And Tom DeLay would not let that bill pass. Tom DeLay, either by that action or just in his head, is obviously a molester of young Asian girls. So many of the workers in the North Mariana Islands who work for American corporations are either from China, or they were.
In the Philippines.
Yeah, Philippines, mm-hmm. China, Vietnam, who go there. Not so much China anymore because, they have their own sweatshop industries now. But but other South Asian countries. And I guess Tom DeLay saw that as his own personal little playpen where he could go molest and abuse underage girls, much like what Rush Limbaugh does when he goes to the Dominican Republic with his little Viagra pills. You know, he got caught coming back into the country with Viagra pills that weren't his mm-hmm. prescription. So, all of these Republicans are vile. They're disgusting. As far as the North Mariana Islands is concerned, Tom DeLay wanted to make sure that he had easy access to underage Asian girls there. And it's just horrifying. Like I've said earlier tonight and other times, if there is a God that these people believe in, when they do pass into God consciousness, that God is going to rip them into a million pieces and throw their bodies down where sharks and rats can eat them. You know what I'm saying? Thanks, Flo. I guess Flo's gone. I appreciate
it. No, I'm right here.
Oh,
Mike.
You're there. Okay.
Well, I wanted to say one more thing. I think they will try to, like Boehner and, what's his name? The minority whip there.
You're talking about Mitch McConnell. He's a minority leader.
I don't know. But I think they'll try to give Obama a hard time about the spending. All of a sudden, they're going to be concerned about our budget and how much we owe and what we're passing on to our kids. These people have no problem spending $535 billion on a military budget that doesn't include the wars that we're involved in. But when it comes to anything for us, for our, that would help us or our country or the hardworking people of this country, they just can't seem to find the money to do that.
And yet their constituents continue to vote them into office, which is something, Flo, that it's easier for me to understand the theory of general relativity than it is for me to understand why Republicans continue to vote these filthy, horrible people in. Flo, thanks. I got a boogie. Thanks for checking in, okay? Okay. Flo? All right. Thanks, Flo. I appreciate it. All right. We have a break coming up here, so let's do that. We'll come back and take some more calls. I'm Mike Malloy.
Virgin Atlantic flew a 747 from London's Heathrow Airport to Amsterdam, fueled partly by coconuts.
Oh, Christ. All right, it's 25 before the hour. Back to your calls. Bruce is calling from California, listening on the Internet. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I wanted to say something about the what you were saying about Bush protecting the hydrothermal vents.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got to tell you that I have patented the first system that uses those commercially to generate electricity, and the amount of power is astounding. And it is, I don't know whether, I can't say whether it's directed at me or not, but I can tell you what, that it affects me. I have actually patented something that can really change the way energy is produced. And,
well, when do we all got start to use it?
Well, it takes time to get it licensed and to get people to use it and to develop it. I mean, I've got a concept.
Do you have to live near a thermal vent to use it?
No, because it depends on whether it goes into the grid.
Yeah.
It goes into the grid. The amount of power is astounding.
Okay, I'm completely in the dark and ignorant about what you're saying. No. Send me an email.
All right, can I give a website?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's Marshall with two L's, system, singular, .com.
M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, system, .com. MarshallSystem.com.
And I'm telling you, this is a very important deal to me because there's a lot more than fish at stake. You were saying that there wasn't any oil or energy, but there is energy at stake here.
Right.
Big
okay.
Time. Big time.
All right. It sounds good, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate appreciate you checking in. Y'all go check out his website. Check it out. Do we have William back in Miami, listening on WINZ? Let's try, William.
Yes. Hi, Mike.
Hey, William.
Well, may I begin by thanking you for your ever vigilant insight and dedication. I mean, many of us share your rage.
All right. Yeah.
I'm an early responder to 9/11. I could see the true measure of their compassion when search efforts were held up on the third day so that Bush could go grandstanding.
Yeah.
If you had someone that was a loved one missing, I don't think you'd be too happy to hear a prolonged speech that basically took off the whole afternoon and closed down half the city.
I hear that.
But what I'm calling about today is a topic dear to your heart, which is accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm rather concerned, and many of us are concerned, that this administration is about to walk free with blood on their hands and profit in their pockets. By any stretch of the imagination, how can this go unrecognized? It's just, it would not happen on day-to-day life. If you saw somebody in your neighborhood and they knocked down an old woman and they stole her groceries, so there would be accountability. That person would be in jail. If you saw someone get shot or run over with a car, there would be accountability in our system as we know it. How can it go on that so many thousands of people, so many lives could lead to this, and there could be so much death and destruction, and they could just walk away freely? And, we're concerned that the petitions and the articles of impeachment, unfortunately, they've all failed. At least to date, they've failed. And but that doesn't mean we should let this slide. And what happens is, it seems that in our society, with our media, what gets the attention is the rather bizarre elements. It's not the war itself. It's an accomplished banner. It's not the fact that we've destroyed a country. It's the fact that somebody throws a shoe, and then we realize, hey, maybe they're not happy that we destroyed their country.
Yeah.
And similarly, that's what.
Where'd he go?
Wish I had a team of lawyers.
William? You're fading to the point where we can't hear you.
Okay. If I speak a little louder, will that help?
No. It's just you just talk in a normal tone of voice, but the volume on your call dropped down to almost zero. Back up a little bit and go ahead. William?
Hello?
Is this William?
No, this is Rob.
Okay, Rob, I'm sorry. Let me put you on hold. All right, we're not going to take any more phone calls tonight. And the reason is obvious. We still have screw-ups in the home office, and I'm just not going to subject the listeners to it. And we will not take any more phone calls on this program until this is corrected. So, because I'm not going to do this to the listeners or the callers. Absolutely not. So, whoever's listening in Phoenix and needs to know this, get the damn thing fixed. Now, from our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, who has been sending just an abundance of stuff here that we haven't gotten to, the U.S. Army sent out letters to 7,000 family members of soldiers who were killed in the Iraq or Afghan Bush adventures, 7,000 family members. Now, that would obviously include more than one letter to families, because I think the American death toll of our soldiers in these two wars of opportunity are around 5,000. But the Army sent the letters out to the families, and they were addressed to John Doe, 7,000 family members of dead soldiers and Marines, got letters addressed to Dear John Doe. Now, George Casey, who is Army Chief of Staff and a general, said it was a terrible printing error. The 7,000 original letters were sent late last month to inform survivors about private organizations that offer gifts, programs, other assistance to families that have lost soldiers in Bush's military. And it was sent from the U.S. Army Human Resource Command's Casualty and Mortuary Affairs Center. The letters were printed by a contractor, and they were to have been automatically addressed with the specific names and addresses of survivors. Instead, they contained the placeholder greeting, Dear John Doe. Now, the Army is now blaming this on the private contractor. Yeah, it was the contractor's fault, not the Army's fault, which raises the question, why the hell is someone outside the Army handling this particular job? And as Sharon points out, the only thing in these wars that the Bush crime family has not outsourced is the dying. Our soldiers are still doing that. Astonishing, astonishing. This is the respect, quote, quote, shown to people in the military by this filthy Republican administration. Republicans have always hated the military. They always abuse soldiers, Marines, airmen. Always. They force them into wars of opportunity and then refuse to support them on any level. Education, disability, and now this. Bastards. Bastards. And I just wonder, again, you know, my question, my forever question, why does anybody in this country ever, under any circumstances, for any reason, support any Republican seeking public office? Why? Why? No, if you got an answer, let me know. Now, according to thinkprogress.org, over the past few years, the U.S. Army War College has that's where you study war. I mean, that's what it is. U.S. Army War College is where you study tactics, strategies, all sorts of things about war. And it's attracted, the U.S. Army War College has attracted a lot of attention for its willingness to criticize the Bush administration, the foreign policy of the Bush administration. The War College published a paper in 2004 that concluded the global war on terrorism was, quote, unfocused, and the war in Iraq unnecessary. Eh? But today, former Washington Post reporter Thomas Ricks writes that Stephen Metz, chairman of the department at the Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, said that the school eventually had to censor itself because of pressure from Don Rumsfeld's Pentagon. Right? In fact, Stephen Metz, who is the chairman of a department at the Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, Metz explicitly blamed the strained relationship between the Army and its civilian overseers under then-Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Quote, at the time, with growing sensitivity to criticism by Rumsfeld and the Army's attempt to make peace with Rumsfeld after Shinseki left, several members of SSI had been verbally flogged after interviews. So the only reason I bring this up, one more example of how the Bush crime family absolutely and utterly destroyed any kind of independence, this time from the military. There is no end to what these bastards have done. Let's roll, let's blow something up, blow something up, blow something up, that's what bombs are then for, so you can blow stuff up, let's roll, let's blow something up. It's about 10 before the hour, and a couple more images to entertain yourself when you go to bed tonight. First of all, thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and our executive producer, Kathy Bay. This I missed this, but on Sunday, Andrea Mitchell, apparently on, what was the show, Meet the Press? Is that the NBC program? I think so. She said that U.S. troops are helping Egypt prevent what is being called arms smuggling from tunnels in the Rafah border crossing while Israel continues its attacks on Gaza. Arms smuggling, okay? She said that U.S. military officers from the Corps of Engineers had been stationed on the Egyptian side of the Rafah crossing in order to prevent these arms being smuggled through the illegal tunnels. So, you know, once again, now somebody in the U.S. military establishment has ordered uniformed military officers to assist in the genocide against the Palestinians. Now we are directly involved. These tunnels have been almost the only way for people in Gaza to obtain food and medicine after Israel, pretty much starting back in mid-2007, made it impossible to get supplies in along the coast. It's astonishing. So again, when the time comes, and it will, unless there is almost a complete 180 reversal of U.S. policy where it concerns the Middle East, if there is not, there are too many dead children. There are too many Palestinians, Arabs, people in the Middle East who have, honest to God, had enough. They've just had enough. They've had enough. At any time in the past 50 or 60 years, this could have been resolved. I'm not talking about the world's Jews exiting Israel. I'm not talking about that at all. It could have been resolved, but it has not been. The Palestinians have just been pounded into the ground, starving, forced into concentration camp-like living conditions. And now a couple hundred of their children butchered by Israeli jets made or bought and paid for either in this country or with American dollars, delivering American ordnance on these people, bombs, bullets. And we in this country, for the most part, we just, you know, just go about our business of day-to-day survival now in the Bush economy, not realizing what these sons of bitches in the U.S. government, Democrat and Republican alike, have set us up for because of the absolute unfairness that has been ongoing where it concerns the Middle East. Absolute unfairness. There is no fairness here. There is no balance. There is no justice. There's no dignity. There's no honor. Nothing. This is wholesale slaughter of innocent people. And our filthy, filthy Secretary of State sits on her ass in the UN Security Council tonight and votes neither up nor down. 14 of the 15 members vote for an immediate ceasefire. Condoleezza Rice sits there on her well-padded ass and does nothing. She abstains. Will not vote. So the next time it happens, as it surely will, when somewhere either in this country or somewhere around the planet, when Americans are attacked, and we all suck in our breath and look at each other like, oh, my God! Don't be idiotic. Don't stand there and say to the person next to you, well, what have we done to deserve this? You won't do that, will you? Because we know there's no reason that we don't, unless, once again, it's an example of willful ignorance. We know what we've done. We know why we are hated in that part of the that region of Earth, of the Earth. We know why. Well, and by the way, as a follow-up, United Nations investigators say they have uncovered no evidence to support a claim by the Israeli military that Hamas fighters were in that school in Gaza that resulted in an attack by Israeli forces that killed 40 civilians, many of them children. There was no Hamas there. Oh, and one more thing. The anti-U.S. cleric Muqtada al-Sadr in Iraq called yesterday for what he calls revenge operations against American forces to protest Israel's Gaza Strip offensive. Yeah. The statement issued by Sadr's office urged Palestinian flags be raised on mosques, churches, and other buildings in Iraq, and that all countries shut down Israel's embassies. And so it goes. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.